This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In the last 12 months, a record 22,651 Melburnians have moved to regional Victoria. So that is the largest exodus of people to a regional area from a major city since the gold rush. So how does this impact towns and communities? If that many people just move in, what needs to change? A major report by Infrastructure Australia has just been completed, and they concluded that all levels of government, communities and private businesses need to work together to remake the country. That's a big statement, isn't it? The report claims that we need to take into consideration the huge surge of people working from home, that we need to overhaul the way people pay for transport, and we also need to consider our use of wastewater. Maybe it's time to start drinking it. But overall, the report says there has to be a new approach to infrastructure to ensure that our cities, our regional centres and our small country towns remain livable. So what's at the top of your list? What takes priority? Is it housing, hospitals, roads, jobs? Where do you start to ensure that your town or suburb remains livable?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria,
this is The Conversation Hour.
From housing to healthcare, roads to transport, jobs to water, what infrastructure is needed, both in the short term and in the long term? Now, this is both in our outer suburbs as Melbourne Metro just gets bigger and wider, but also in our regional city centres where record numbers of people are moving and I dare say continue to move. This text already, come to Shep. Pretty simple and straightforward. Well, I have heard the food is fantastic there, so you may tempt me. But Peter Colacino is from Infrastructure Australia. He's the Chief of Policy and Research and has been behind this huge report that has just been released. Peter, the statement that we need to remake the country, should we be a little concerned by that?
I don't think there's any reason for concern here. What there is really a wonderful opportunity. I mean, what we are seeing across Australia, and of course we're all seeing this today in our homes and in our workplaces, is a really accelerating pace of change and uncertainty that sits with the impacts of COVID and pandemic. Will we keep working from home? Will we return to the office? An opportunity that goes with that, you know, which is socialising locally in your neighbourhood, or for some people, as you mentioned in your introduction, it's involved moving to regions, using the opportunity to resettle and really changing people's lifestyles.
We know that we have wanted and needed people to move to regional areas, in particular GPs, teachers, you name it, the healthcare sector. We also need big companies and organisations to base themselves in certain parts of regional Victoria to ensure jobs. And this is something that it feels a little bit Groundhog Day. You know, we've discussed this for a long time, but now the people have spoken, they're moving and infrastructure hasn't caught up. So where do we begin and how quickly can we move, do you think?
Well, the first point I'd make is that the reason why we're seeing a different type of change to perhaps what we've seen in the past is the power of technology, this digitalisation of the economy. So people are leaving cities and moving to regions, and there are also people who are just staying longer in regions rather than moving away for work or education. And because we now all have a multitude of devices, phones and tablets and laptops with cameras, because we have the benefits of improving broadband, both in terms of one of the best mobile phone networks in the world, and also, of course, the investment that's gone into NBN, we see an increased opportunity for connecting those devices through Zoom or Teams or the range of different products. So people are not just moving to regions and needing to think about a different job, but in fact people are moving or staying in regions and being able to take their job with them. So wealth's moving as well as people.
I wonder how true that is, though, Peter. We still have regulars on this show from different parts of regional Victoria that quite literally have to walk to the top of the hill so that they can get reception and call us, and that NBN isn't stable in all places. So I do wonder whether or not some people are moving, thinking that they'll just be able to log in and Zoom and I can do all of this stuff, but then they get there and that's not the reality.
Oh, look, there's no doubt that the quality of our infrastructure, as well as its costs and accessibility, ranges across the diversity of Australia. And that's why in the Australian Infrastructure Plan, we took the approach of looking at Australia in the context of four geographies. Of course, our big fast-growing cities, your Melbournes or your Sydneys, in the first category, where infrastructure choice is perhaps simpler, where affordability is generally high because of high levels of demand and competition, and also access is relatively easy. And as you move into smaller communities, where the fundamental commercial proposition around infrastructure provision changes, and it's not about well-functioning markets, but is actually about government investment and subsidy, quite often you see lesser levels of service provision. But we also have one of the most sparsely populated countries in the world. We have, with that, challenges associated with our geography, you know, the fundamental topography or shape of the land. But what we are seeing is progress towards improved connectivity supported by the NBN, supported by our mobile networks. But we also need to see further reform and progress, as I mentioned, as we've called out in the plan, particularly thinking about regional connectivity.
Peter Colacino is with you, Infrastructure Australia's Chief of Policy and Research. But what do you think needs to be built first? Do we need to retrofit? Do we need to rethink, in particular, as we move out of the city of Melbourne? This text, I live in a rural area of the Surf Coast Shire. So many of my friends and people I know are unable to continue living and renting in the area because of rental prices, people living metro areas to the regions. We did an entire program on that topic alone. Where does housing come into this, Peter?
Look, that's really a fabulous question, because it's actually housing which has been one of the most often had conversations for us as we've engaged in regions. And it's right across the diversity of housing. And your listener who wrote in then, recognising some of the changes that have occurred in line with population shifts, has hit a nail on the head that we've heard about. So we are seeing pressures on housing, both the private market and around access to social and affordable housing in regional areas. It is a common point of conversation for us, and it's one of the reasons why social infrastructure is featured in the Australian Infrastructure Plan for the first time in 2021. We've added to the approach that we took in our last plan in 2016, including both social infrastructure and waste, and really starting to look at what is the economic value that can be unlocked by investment in, for instance, social housing.
Waste is a really big part of it. Housing is a huge part of it as well. And we are going to go to different parts of the state in just a moment, and we're going to dig a little deeper into some of these particular topics like transport, like housing, and like jobs as well. Many people wanting to comment on reception. Perry lives in the Macedon Ranges, and he says, I get full reception on the Great Wall of China when I lived there, but we struggle to get it here in Macedon, even with the booster. Just finally, Peter, when you talk about what changes need to be made in order to ensure that where we live remains livable, what's at the top of the list? What does livable mean?
Well, within the Australian Infrastructure Plan, our focus is looking at economic growth, it's looking at environmental outcomes, it's looking at improved governance, and then the fourth lens is thinking about livability. And within that, we think about concepts like quality of life and standard of living, both in terms of appreciating what the best is that Australians experience, but also notions of equity. So that lens we apply to all of the recommendations in the plan. And what we're hearing about in regional areas is, first and foremost, access to jobs. So when people are relocating, they want to see access to employment, they want to see support for their partners as well as perhaps the primary employed person. They want to think about access to high-quality social infrastructure, so education, healthcare, support for their family. Obviously, many of us have complex caring arrangements, both in terms of our children, but also perhaps our parents. Mm.
Big things, though, that, you know, we have dedicated hours to some of these topics. I mean, when you talk about jobs, the jobs aren't there. In actual fact, they're falling away, especially if you look at places like Gippsland and, you know, the transferable work that's supposed to be happening there just isn't happening. And I'm not sure whether this is something where we need to be relying on the private sector or the government sector in order to make sure that those jobs are there. And that's just one part of it. I mean, I'm not sure whether we're going to get to the bottom of it today, Peter, but these are big, big changes that you're talking about.
Well, that point around access to employment and industry enablement is, it doesn't sit squarely in the court of government, nor does it sit squarely in the court of the private sector. It really requires collaboration. So what both we at Infrastructure Australia and our colleagues at Infrastructure Victoria have been looking at is the incumbent competitive advantages of regions, existing assets that can be leveraged to support growth, and really trying to understand both the industries that are doing well, that have a history of success, and also those that have the opportunity to grow. So if you like, the new industries with more accelerated growth. And what we see an opportunity to do is government and industry to partner together to knock down the barriers to that growth, and as I've mentioned then, to support livability as a result. But I just really reinforce that point. We see really often it's social infrastructure in regional communities that can shape and alter their character, can create a feeling of value and reinforce quality of life, and then can attract other investment around it.
Peter, thanks so much for your time. It's been interesting.
Thanks so much.
Peter Colacino, Infrastructure Australia's Chief of Policy and Research. And that's behind the huge Australia-wide infrastructure research that has just been done, looking at the mass exodus of people from major city centres, including Melbourne. Over 22,000 people have left Melbourne and are moving to the regions. So how do we cater for that? And what needs to be done first? What needs to be done quickly? And then what can be done, say, over a decade's time? This text, Rochelle, my partner and I, both teachers, moved to East Gippsland 3 years ago for a fresh challenge. Although we loved the natural beauty, the lack of basic services, the ability to see a GP, for example, is just simply staggering. There is a massive challenge in attracting and keeping professionals in this area. And quite frankly, the conversation and the lack of cultural infrastructure and events make it difficult to assimilate and connect with the community. What do you think? 1300 222 774. Dave's in Phillip Island.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I just wonder how long the exodus from Melbourne is actually going to last. Like the last text message that you just read out is a perfect example of that. You know, people move out thinking it's going to be amazing, and then just it's not. It's just not what I thought it was going to be.
I've wondered the same thing too, Steve. And where you are in Phillip Island, I have family there. And we had this exact same chat almost a year ago. And, you know, my cousin was saying people get here and think that it's great, and then all of a sudden realise that they can't enrol their kids in school because they're full.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, you know, there's now, like I do a lot of these remote interviews and remote video production and all of this sort of stuff, which is great. But lots of, like, the numbers are dropping off because people don't want to see stuff on Zoom anymore. They don't want to be a part of this. They're just getting sick of it all. So some people that moved down in the first lockdown last year have moved back to Melbourne because they miss the chats around the water cooler, and they miss out on that promotion because they weren't there. They weren't part of that culture. So how long is it going to last? So before the exodus goes back the other way and people go, oh, it's just not what I thought it was going to be. So they'll shift back to Melbourne.
Have you always lived in the area? Have you always lived along in the Bass Coast?
No. We moved down 4 years ago. But my wife and I, we're like city people. We're country people that got stuck in the city for work. So we've been busting to get out of Melbourne for years.
Yeah, right.
But I just don't know how long it can last. And I'm slightly concerned about how much money is going to be spent on infrastructure. We're going to love it. Like, we don't have a hospital on the island. So we would love money to go into infrastructure.
And that's all changing. I know there's a community hospital that's opening up in Cowes, and there's a huge amount of resources being put into Wonthaggi Hospital, and we'll talk about that in just a moment as well. Steve, you raised some really good points. Thank you. Glenda's in Leongatha. Hi, Glenda.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I would agree with Peter that we have to get modern with all our infrastructure. We've got a really, really dangerous corner in Leongatha. The council, Vic Roads and VicTrack can't collaborate together to find a solution to this, what we call kamikaze corner.
Yeah, roads and trains. That's a huge part of it, Glenda. We're actually going to go deep with Professor Graeme Curry in just a moment into transport, because, I mean, I feel like I've spoken about fast rail for so long, for example, or even just regular rail services, and then the impacts that that has on roads as well. Thank you. Lots of people commenting on whether or not you are able to actually use NBN or get internet connection. Has this guy ever even used the internet in the regions? No way. My wife and I can't rely on Teams or Zoom. She has a government job from home during lockdown. Plus, there is no unlimited internet via satellite. That's from Rich, who's in the southwest coast. James is in Bendigo. He says, when I moved to regional Victoria last year, I had to conduct my Zoom tutorials over my phone on 4G because my home NBN just couldn't keep up. It's unbelievable. Jen Cromarty is the CEO of the Committee for Geelong. Interestingly, Jen, I know there's a big meeting being held in Geelong this Thursday looking at this exact topic. What's on the top of the list for you?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things happening, and I would love to be able to respond to those callers from Gippsland, because I think there's some really interesting points being made about infrastructure. But this week, what the Geelong, and I'd say the business community, it's the group called Tourism Greater Geelong and the Bellarine, the Geelong Chamber of Commerce and the Committee for Geelong have called for a forum to really look at the impact of the pandemic on our small to medium business sector. And we're trying to get voices from our membership straight to three levels of government. And so everyone's turning up, which is fantastic. So all of our local representatives from the political realm, as well as representatives from our membership, to say, well, what is it actually going to mean, as, you know, and your callers have rightly said, not only do we have a lot of people moving into the Bellarine, into the Geelong region, but it's having some significant impacts on things like housing affordability. So I don't know, I think you have spoken about this, but house pricing is just escalating in Geelong.
It's gone bananas. I follow the housing market. I don't know why, I've just always been a bit obsessed by it, even though I can't afford anything. And I look at it and I'm just a little bit baffled. It just seems ridiculous. The price of homes, whether it be an apartment or a house, is just so unaffordable for pretty much everyone now. But then you add the pressure to regional areas. Is that kind of what needs to be fixed first, do you think, Jen?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So in terms of housing and housing affordability and accommodation generally, what we're seeing is almost like a perfect storm. Low interest rates, obviously an exodus. And I will say Geelong, I would categorise as very different to Leongatha. And I have done a lot of work in Gippsland, so I understand the challenges in the remoter parts of the state. But Geelong is exceedingly well equipped to take more people. But the issue is land supply. The issue is a lot of people buying that second home during the pandemic and actually living in it, which means rental properties are absolutely almost non-existent. We also can't even get housing for what we'd call essential workers. And this is a big issue across the state. But from the Bowen Region Partnership. So I'm a member of that, which is the basically the policy body that advises the state government. It is one of the top issues. So when we look at this perfect storm, we've got people coming into the region, sometimes not necessarily looking for employment because they're working remotely, but they're taking up a lot of our housing, which is great on some levels, but essentially we have got a big issue. Geelong was growing faster than Melbourne before the pandemic, and that has only exacerbated. So if I can just respond a bit to the Infrastructure Australia report and the question, which is what do we do? I think nationally we need a settlement strategy, we need really clear population planning, and we need to look at these regional centres as hubs outside of metropolitan capitals to take a lot more people, which means if we do invest, those cities can take it, you know, Newcastle, Wollongong, Geelong, we can take that investment and actually get our population to double very, very quickly, in my view.
It's sort of Groundhog Day. I mean, it's decentralisation is what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
But we've been talking about that forever.
Well, it's happening, Rochelle, and I just think right now what we do have, and Infrastructure Australia know from the Committee for Geelong and also from what we call the Gateway Cities Alliance, which is Newcastle, Wollongong and Geelong, we've been deeply engaged with Infrastructure Australia for the last 18 months, and we've said you need to carve out those regional centres that are able to take that population growth, because you already have airports, we already have, you know, seaports, we have rail infrastructure. We do need more, and I totally agree with the comment about social infrastructure, cultural infrastructure, so that people who want to live and have a regional experience do have everything they need. And then what these cities become, so Geelong very much is a regional capital for the southwest. Mm. So we have excellent health and educational facilities. So I kind of think if we're looking at nationally, we need to carve out the metropolitan capitals and then have this next tier of cities that really need to grow very, very strongly in this environment. And hopefully it's a win-win for the country, effectively.
Jen, stay with us. Norm's called. He's in Traralgon. Hi, Norm.
Good day there.
Hello. What do you want to say?
Two important things up in the region of Victoria, especially up in Gippsland, is number one, job priority, which we need badly up here. Number two is the rental and the buying of houses, which have gone through the roof in the last 12 months. And I believe talking to the agents and all that around here, the people are coming from Melbourne buying the housing and pushing the rental market up and the prices up of the housing. Now, we're in the situation where we're under a new landlord. Our landlord sold out after 9 years in this property we're renting. And now we've just got to move out because the rental's gone through the market. And lucky we're in a position where we can buy a downsize and buy a cheaper place.
So you're having to move, Norm, because your rents just keeps going up?
That's correct. It's gone beyond the what we can afford, being pensioners and all this. And just to me, the landlords are being too greedy and pushing it through the roof and looking on the money side instead of the human side.
Norm, I wish you all the best. I really hope that you find somewhere safe and secure to live. Jen, just finally, I mean, Norm raises two points there. One, we've touched on a little bit, which is housing. But then Norm also mentioned jobs. Now, that is a huge issue for Gippsland, but it's a huge issue for everyone. When you meet on Thursday with all of the different community and business leaders around Geelong, where does jobs fall into this and ensuring that both the private and government sector come and put their money where their mouth is?
Yeah, look, probably a very quick response to that would be looking at the Geelong Central Business District. And I know City of Melbourne's looked at this with the state government to say, what do we do about our cities? Because obviously workers aren't coming in as much. And there are a huge number of jobs in jeopardy there around all the supply services that happen in the city. So I think each city in Victoria, and I'll say Geelong, obviously, we need to have our own city special fund that helps our businesses innovate. Otherwise, Geelong, for example, I think 90% of the jobs come from our small to medium enterprise. While we've got big government agencies and others, obviously, that employ a lot of people, our small to medium enterprise sector employs a huge number of people and they're in jeopardy. And that includes jobs for young people, which I'm deeply concerned about because most young people have interruption to their education and training. They haven't been able to go on campus to universities to get social networks and those learning and the on-the-job experiences working in the cafes or restaurants or whatever the retail job might be when they first start out. So there's a big flow-on effect that we need to look at and say, what can we do with government to innovate and understand the problem at hand? So that will be one of the things we talk about. Plus, obviously, and I'll give a plug, it was on the news, Geelong is doing extremely well with vaccination. So we'll be talking about how can we exacerbate that and be a pilot site potentially what the new world will look like. You know, how do we run events? How do we open up? If we hit those targets, what can Geelong do to be a leader in showing how we can actually open up effectively and safely?
It's interesting, Jen. You know, a lot of this makes me excited. I love regional Victoria, born and bred there, love travelling there, have family and friends there. And, you know, forever I've been championing just how wonderful it is to live in regional Victoria. But then when you dig down and we look at some of these issues and what needs to change, and I guess just for how long things have been left to become problematic, are you positive? Are you feeling like this negative or positive about what's happening and what we can do? Because I'm feeling a little overwhelmed.
Oh, look, and I can understand both feelings. I do personally find it a bit challenging because I do get asked a lot of questions, and just in your session you've talked about housing, transport, you know, what we're actually doing in terms of supporting people from the social front. But I'm a pretty optimistic person, and Geelong is growing very fast and we are a very connected community, and we do get the attention of government, which is fortunate, but it's because we can actually handle it and be very resilient. So we put out a report late last year called Resilient Geelong. So it actually shows how Geelong over the last 40 years has been able to bounce back from economic shocks, you know, Ford and Alcoa. You go all the way back to pyramids in the early 90s, which impacted our entire community. And we've been able to replace those jobs, stay kind of, I suppose, positive in terms of growth and also community sentiment. So we're a very resilient community. But what the government will need to do is really strongly look at this accommodation issue. And I heard your caller coming in talking about access to rental properties. And the market does dictate these things to a degree, but government can fast track.
Yeah, and they can change things as well. Absolutely. And put rules and regulations in. Jen, it's always wonderful to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Jen Cromarty. She's the CEO for the Committee for Geelong. Text on transport. Trains from Ballarat to Melbourne should be in under an hour. It's been promised forever. It needs to happen, says Joe in Ballarat. I know, transport, where does that fit into it? This is from Barb. With the growth around West Gippsland and Latrobe Valley, there needs to be a dedicated Gippsland rail line as there is for the Geelong line. Trains are no faster than they used to be, despite the promise of faster trains. Gippsland lines are still at the mercy of the metro system. Professor Graham Curry is a professor of public transport at Monash University. Professor Curry, lots of people saying fast rail. You know what? I'll believe it when I see it. Is that actually the silver bullet that we're all waiting for?
No, it's never going to be a silver bullet, but it's still a good idea. And it depends on what problem you're trying to solve. I think we all recognise there's benefits of increasing growth in regional centres, and railways help us do that. The infrastructure that used those railways, it's all pretty old. And the last time we had a big fast rail project, we spent most of the money just trying to get the infrastructure up to scratch to get the services running the way they should really do that were there. So we'd like to do this, but it's expensive and the demands often don't warrant such huge investments.
Given how many people are moving, what can be changed in the short term? So if you've got more people commuting, if you've got more people using public transport and our rail system, what can change immediately, if anything?
Well, immediately, we can manage demand rather than put new infrastructure in, which is exactly what's happened during COVID. We've been managing travel so that you work at home, which immediately takes the demand away. But the truth is that infrastructure decisions take a long time to develop, and that's really been the history of the last 50 years in Melbourne and Victoria. We've been increasing transport infrastructure to cope with growth in demand.
Lots of people say, yeah, but now we're all going to be working on Zoom. It's all going to be done remotely, that we won't need to be travelling into the city as much. Do you agree with that?
I share Will. There has been a shift. We think that after COVID's gone, working from home will increase. But, you know, it was only 1 in 20 jobs every day used to be at home. For the day of the census, for example, there's only 4 or 5% of the census. We think that may well double But still, 90% of us will still be going to work like we were. So there will be a change, but it'll be at the edge. It will make a difference. And it's quite a good idea, really. A lot of people that want to work from home should have that opportunity, I think.
I am always staggered as to why we don't look at buses more as an option, especially in our outer suburbs, rather than just relying on trains. And as we start to sort of work within our communities a little more, I think that's changed because of COVID. Will we ever run our bus system in the way that Sydney does?
Well, I think Sydney's struggling in many ways. And don't forget, we've got trams in Melbourne, which is why we don't rely on buses in the inner areas as much as they do. I mean, I think both Sydney and Melbourne could do with better bus services in the fringe suburbs, where you're right, I think buses make a lot of sense because the capital costs of investment in rail, you know, just don't make sense in those sorts of development areas.
The idea of park and ride, there was a huge investment and focus on that for a very long time. Is that something that we're going to continue to see? We see entire new train stations being built. We're seeing lots of train stations and promises and political promises around how much car space there is around train station. Is that going to be the focus, do you think?
Well, I hope not. The reason something like 40% of every journey by rail in Melbourne in the morning is from a car. It's park and ride and people being dropped off by cars. And the reason it's so high, it's one of the highest in the world, is because our bus services accessing stations are pretty poor. They're not a very good alternative. So people are left with just having to drive. Now, just encouraging that in the future, I'm not sure it's necessarily a good idea. Really, the space around stations is very premium space. It's a great way to live without having a car. Many cities are trying to use that space to build housing, you know, where a diverse might have a car rather than building car parks, which are pretty boring and only used for one person for commuting every day. And then at the weekend, they're not used at all. So I'm not sure it's a positive move.
It's interesting, lots of people saying, you know, fast rail to regional and rural areas. I'm so sick of even talking about it. It never seems to happen. And I know there was a big push for places like Mildura to have their train system up and running again because that was shut down years and years ago. Are we going to start to see, well, say the train line to Mildura reopen again as more people start to move there and base themselves there?
The fundamental truth is Australia's growing. I know it doesn't look like it is at the moment, but we'll come back from that. And regional centres will grow as well, and that will help with the viability of these rail services. But Mildura is a very long way. The demand for rail for that distance is not huge, and the costs of actually getting all that way are gigantic. So further places will always struggle, but I do think there will be growth in regional rail, which is what the truth of V-Line has been through its history. It's really been trying to cope with growth over its time. It's a question of how much investment we can afford given that.
Professor Graham Curry, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks.
He's Professor of Public Transport at Monash University. This text, Rochelle, I want to issue a huge warning to people about the lack of infrastructure when you do a tree change or a sea change. In 2011, I moved 4 hours away from a capital city. We were sold a bill of goods as a weekend visit and didn't reveal the lack of transport, inflated rent prices, the cost of living. It was so high because of food cost and transport cost. Be very careful. I moved back to the city back in 2015. That's from Elizabeth in Doncaster. And this is from Spencer, who's in Wantirna South. The outer suburbs of Melbourne are also lagging behind in infrastructure. Roads and public transport are extremely outdated, yet the house prices skyrocket. Houses keep popping up, and as a young person, it was very, very difficult before I had a car because public transport is just so unreliable and the lack of trains in the Knox area is appalling. Please don't forget about the outer suburbs. Well, we certainly haven't. Paul Kersley is the Director of Business, Engineering and Major Projects at the City of Greater Dandenong. And Paul, this is something, again, that you've been working on for a very long time. Do you see the importance of Dandenong within this infrastructure report that's been released? Can Dandenong take a greater focus here, do you think? Should more money, should more infrastructure be pumped into Dandenong?
Well, yes, I believe it has to be. And the
the current program the council's been running with the government. I mean, we have had a partnership approach with the state government through the Development Victoria Revitalising Central Dandenong project. That's been vital, but we have seen increased investment in that recently with an announcement of a $600 million development into the centre of Dandenong with a Capital Alliance and that program. And we've also been pushing for transport improvements and those sorts of things. But I'll just, out of interest, read you a figure that came from the Victorian Planning Authority. And I think it's very important in the current context of COVID that this was pre-COVID figure, that 86% of Melbourne residents work outside of the central business district.
Earlier, when we were talking about jobs, and we were talking about jobs in particular in Geelong and when Ford shut down, you've had sort of, I guess, very similar instances in Dandenong when you look at General Motors, Heinz, you know, some of the really big factories and workplaces there. Where does jobs need to come in to, I guess, getting Dandenong to exactly where you were talking about?
Well, it's an absolute fundamental, because without jobs we don't have a resilient community and we don't have a resilient economy. So talking about Geelong, we faced a similar issue with automotive industry closing, except ours was not so much the actual factories of Ford. We had all of the supply chain in Dandenong South. However, we've seen a very robust and strong economic rebound in our commercial and manufacturing sectors, because they have diversified. They've diversified into health. They've diversified. We still make trains and buses and trams. And we have a saying in Dandenong that we make everything between a potato cake and a train. So it's a very, very strong, vibrant economy, but jobs are absolutely fundamental, and we sit on the edge of the biggest growth area in Victoria and Melbourne, with Casey and Cadinia and those growing suburbs. And the focus really needs to be, why should they be sitting on a train going into the CBD another when they should really just be focusing on jobs in our region? And that's,
it doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, when you talk about how big and how fast that region is growing, is it right that it's actually, when you put it all together, it's bigger than Adelaide?
Correct, it is. This region, which is we now call it the Greater Southeast Melbourne region of eight councils, is bigger than Adelaide. It's growing faster than Adelaide, and therefore we believe we need all of the services and the focus of making it the region that it can be. I mean, we've got wineries, beaches, we've got industrial areas, we've got, you know, a whole range of things that the residents are actually coming here to live. And importantly, as the person who you just read out said, they moved to regional Victoria and found it difficult. There are only a small group of people that will move to regional Victoria. We've got a need in our region where people already are living to create jobs and create livability. And that's the focus and function of our council, is to ensure that we can create livability and make sure that really the centre of Dandenong is the region's CBD, so that people can come to us for a whole range of services and activities and those sorts of things. And they don't have to necessarily drive, you know, 50 minutes.
But the revitalising Central Dandenong is a program that's been running for years. It just doesn't make any sense to me, Paul, that we're still having to have this conversation. I mean, Dandenong and the Dandenong region is huge. The people are there. Why is it that the infrastructure just has never kept up? Government? Is it business? Is it private business? What needs to change, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, the RCD project is coming up to 20 years, and I think the government and the council put a lot of faith in putting a lot of the groundwork in and consolidating properties and buying properties ready for the private sector to then purchase. The issue has also been the private sector, that we're not quite ready based on the market availability for selling apartments or those sorts of things. And I think COVID has probably put a challenge in that. Although, as I've said before, we're very thankful that Capital Alliance have entered into a project with Development Victoria for a very significant program to be built over the next 15 or 20 years. And things do take time. They do take time. But we've been advocating for a lot of infrastructure projects to support the eventuality of the growth that will occur in terms of what happens in central Dandenong. So we're currently in a business case with the government about a stadium and an entertainment centre
for Central Dandenong. And these things do take time. You've got to have the vision and you've got to have patience, and then you've got to have the support of other parts of government, whether they be federal or the state.
It's been interesting to speak with you, Paul. Thank you. Paul Kersley, he's the Director of Business, Engineering and Major Projects at the City of Greater Dandenong. And when you think about it, you know, why is it that people from that area are having to travel to the city? But then if you flip it and if you think of Dandenong became the central city centre for Gippsland, so it becomes the gateway for Gippsland as well, it all just seems to make sense. Well, it makes sense in my head anyhow. Margaret's in Lang Lang. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for taking my call. I don't know what impact this call will make, but just I lived in Lyndhurst, and from Lyndhurst, it used to take me 15 minutes to an hour to reach Flagstaff. But now I moved to Lang Lang, which is a little past Queerup, and it takes me over 3.5 hours.
3.5 hours. And so that is what I say, a bus and a train?
That is correct. And that's if they are on time. So, most often there are delays.
Yeah,
so if there could be a train from Cranbourne, because now we're doing so much of infrastructure and it all stops at Cranbourne, but if there's any way that it could be extended, it would make a vast difference on people.
Yeah, and Cranbourne is a huge area, a huge growing area as well. It's a really interesting point. I don't know. I feel like we've been talking about extending train lines and building train lines for such a long time. This text, Ballarat, there is no planning policy within local council. State infrastructure doesn't happen. In Ballarat, there's been a massive housing estate, but the road development is appalling. Massive congestion, especially at school pickup and drop-up times. When we talk about hospitals and healthcare workers as well, especially if they are moving to regional parts of Victoria, or we need them to move to regional parts of Victoria, housing and hospitals go hand in hand. And I know that that's something that they're considering at the Wonthaggi Hospital. Ali Wastey is the CEO of the Bass Coast Shire. Hospitals are something we haven't touched on yet, Ali, and I know a lot of work's been done into Wonthaggi and the growing number of people in your area. You've been listening to this conversation. Is healthcare first, do you think?
It's certainly very important, because we're getting a lot of people from southeast Melbourne go the other way. So they're coming into Bass Coast, which is absolutely fantastic. So we're getting lots of young families. And one of the things that we need at Wonthaggi Hospital is an updated maternity ward because of all the babies being born. So what we're experiencing is that growth with families coming in, and we know that they're staying because the building permits that we're seeing come through council are going through the roof, as are building applications to extend or renovate houses. So we've been experiencing terrific growth throughout COVID, but also before. So we love that we've been discovered and people are staying. But of course, we need that infrastructure there, and critical to that is health, not so people can live well. And it's also a key employment sector of ours. So it's a burgeoning employment opportunity for people. When they come down here, they can work in the health sector. The construction sector is going gangbusters at the moment, as is our food and fibre sector too.
We know that we need healthcare workers, we need GPs. What I find interesting is that it was something that was done, I think, in the sort of 60s and 70s, where accommodation was built within hospitals, and that's something that sort of fell away for some time. But that is an area that you're looking at in Wonthaggi, am I right?
Yeah, that's right. So I think Jen touched on it before. So key worker accommodation is really important. So it's supporting housing for key workers. So for people who work in hospitals, not just the nurses and the doctors, but all the ancillary people as well. So what we're experiencing at Bass Coast, which is quite similar to other areas across Victoria, and we're in constant conversations with ministers about this, is there's a lack of housing supply because people have come down, obviously, during COVID. They're staying in their second homes, which means that there's not a lot of rental around, and affordable housing is a critical issue. So yeah, we would like to see some innovative thinking around that. So when they're building the infrastructure, is also to build that housing supply to support the workers.
There's been a few comments along this line. This is a text here that says, beyond infrastructure, people must modify their expectations around facilities and lifestyle. You can't expect to replicate your city life in the country. Most regional areas are low socioeconomic, so the shopping, the restaurants, the education levels and the entertainment just just aren't there. Integration into community is slow and old-time locals are curious about you, but be cautious. They will be cautious about your motivation for moving. And that's from somebody who lives in Warrnambool. Would you agree with that?
Not necessarily. I think we should be aspirational. So we have at council, we believe that we really should be able to experience a 20-minute neighbourhood where you can get access to amenities, everything that you need to live well within your local region. Now, have we got it all? No, we still need greater broadband access. Our mobile connectivity is not where it should be. But in Bass Coast, for example, we've got the highest levels of volunteerism in the state, which means we have very well-connected communities. We have...
And that's really important. It's been fascinating speaking with you. Thanks so much. That's Ali Wasey. She's the CEO of the Bass Coast Shire. And all of the different areas that we've touched on today on the Conversation Hour, we've actually done entire hours on pretty much all of these topics, from fast rail or why locals can't live in the suburbs and the towns that they have grown up in. So if you subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast, you can go deeper into some of those specific areas as well. This has been the Conversation Hour. Thanks so much for listening, and we look forward to spending time with you soon.